Hello, this is Paula with the Vermilion County News on Thursday, October 17th, 2019. We'll start with a story titled Raising Dough, DACC Dessert Sale Helps Pay for Scholarships. And this is written by Carol Roem in Danville. And there's a picture of Danville Area Community College culinary arts instructor Dana Wheeler shows College Express students Alexis Martinez of Oakwood High School on the left and Andrea Longoria of Westville High School right on the right how to roll out pie crust. There is always room for dessert even after a big Thanksgiving feast. This year, Danville Area Community College's Culinary Arts Program will offer a dozen different desserts that may be ordered and picked up in time for Thanksgiving. The dessert sale helps raise money for the DACC Culinary Arts Scholarship Fund. This is our main fundraiser for our scholarship fund, culinary arts instructor Dana Wheeler said. But first, the public will be able to get a taste of those desserts during a bake sale set for 10:30 a.m. to noon on Wednesday, October 23rd, in the Lincoln Hall hallway outside of the Student Union. During the bake sale, culinary arts students will sell samples of the desserts that will be available for order, and orders for those Thanksgiving desserts will be accepted during the event. We will be selling individual servings, Wheeler said, of the bake sale. That way, they can taste it and make a decision before ordering. The dozen desserts include carrot cake, which contains walnuts, serves 16 to 20 people for $22. Caramel cake serves 16 to 20 people for $20. German chocolate cake contains pecans, serves 16 to 20 people for $22. Italian cream cake, which contains pecans, serves 16 to 20 people for $22. White chocolate cheesecake serves 16 to 20 for $22. Pumpkin rolls serve 12 to 16 for $16. A half a pumpkin roll serves 6 to 8 for $9. No sugar added apple pie for $13. Three berry pie, new, a combination of blackberries, raspberries, and blueberries for $13. A pecan pie for $13. Maple pumpkin pie, which is new, for $10. Turtle pie, rich chocolate, caramel pecans for $13. All pies are 9-inch deep pies. All desserts orders are due by Friday, November 22nd. On Wednesday, College Express students who are area high school students who attend one of 14 career programs at DACC were able to sample some of the desserts they made. They will help create for the bake sale and Thanksgiving dinner fundraiser. This was amazing, Lexi Arnett, a Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin High School student said when she tried the turtle pie dessert. Lexi recalls that her College Express class made a lot of pumpkin rolls last year, which also are on the menu for this year's dessert fundraiser. Another Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin High School student, Taylor Stevenson, gave a thumbs up to the caramel cake she sampled. The caramel cake was really good, she said. Wheeler said the Thanksgiving dessert order form will be available during Wednesday's bake sale. Orders must be paid for at the DACC's cashier's office with the receipt and order form taken in person or emailed to Wheeler at dwheeler, which is W-H-E-E-L-E-R, at dacc.edu. For more information or questions, call Wheeler at 217-918-0573 and leave a message. All calls will be returned. They can pick up the order form there during the bake sale, pay the cashier's office, and then bring the order form back to the event, Wheeler said. Dessert orders must be picked up between 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. Wednesday, November 27th, in room 111 at the Bremer Conference Center. Doors will remain locked until 9 a.m. on November 27th. Individuals must have proof of the cashier receipt at the time of the pickup. Next story is titled Schlarman to Honor Two Alumni, and this is written just by a staff reporter in Danville. Schlarman will induct two alumni into the Schlarman Hall of Fame during halftime Saturday at the Hilltopper football game. The Schlarman Hall of Fame was founded in 1974, with the first inductee being Coach Edmund Zeke Brickowski, class of 1949. Since that time, Brickowski has been joined by 73 others, both alumni and honorary, who have been inducted. The alumni members of the Hall of Fame are honored for their accomplishments while at Schlarman, their achievements in their chosen profession, service, or personal commitment to their community, and their support, voluntarily, financially, or both, of Schlarman. This year's honorees are Richard Pate and Dr. John Shea, both of the class of 1978. Pate and Shea will be inducted Saturday on Schlarman's drummy field during halftime at the Hilltopper versus Westminster Christian football game. The game begins at 5 p.m. Pate was involved with S Club, Chorus, Intramurals, and was a National Honor Society member. He received his AAS from Danville Area Community College and his Bachelor's of Science and a Master's degree in History from the University of Illinois. He is a lead professor of social sciences at DACC. He is the recipient of both the Dorothy Dooley and A.L. Webster Endowed Chairs. He was given the Dreams Come True Award in 2005 for his efforts to increase disability-related accessibility for DACC students, and in 2018 was presented the DACC Distinguished Alumnus Award. Pate has organized yearly workshops for DACC District social science teachers since 1987, and since 2002 was granted preferred provider status by the state of Illinois to provide certified training and development programs for Illinois teachers. Pate developed the first online transfer class at DACC in the fall of 1999 and has gone on to develop 8 online courses for the college. Each year, Pate provides the Vic and Pat Pate Scholarship to a Schlarman student who will be attending DACC, and recently he has worked with Shea, Schlarman, and DACC administrators to expand the dual enrollment program to include more on-campus offerings at Schlarman, one of which he will personally teach. Dr. Shea was a 4-year member of the S Club, and he played 4 years of baseball, football, and basketball. He ran track for 3 years, and in his senior year was second in state in the 880-yard run. He was involved with Operetta Student Council and served as a class officer. Shea received his Bachelor's of Science from Bradley University and his DMD from Southern Illinois University. After graduating, he joined the Navy and practiced throughout the United States as well as in Japan. Shea served as the Associate Director of the Oral and Maxillofacial Surgery Residency Program at the National Naval Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland, from July of 2000 to May of 2002, and in 2010 became assistant clinical professor at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. He began his tenure at Oral and Maxillofacial Surgery Associates, Nashville, in May of 2002, where he currently practices. Shea has made multiple mission trips to Hades, representing his parish, Our Lady of the Lake, in Hendersonville, Tennessee, where he has served on a team conducting dental clinics that provide services that are currently unavailable in remote rural areas of Hades. Okay, the next story is titled City to Use Eminent Domain, Property Scheduled to be Used in Carl Project, and this is written by Jennifer Bailey in Danville. City officials hope negotiated deals still can be reached, but Danville City Council members Tuesday night approved proceeding with eminent domain to gain ownership of properties needed for the proposed Carl Medical Campus off Logan Avenue. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. announced prior to the vote that 2 properties had been taken off the list. Those were at 123 North Logan Avenue, owned by Chris Carpenter, and at 505 Lafayette Street, owned by Charles Hagan. Contracts had been negotiated, Williams reported. However, the City Council authorized eminent domain to acquire 118 North Logan Avenue, owned by Tamara Lopez, and 201 North Logan Avenue and 606 West Madison Street, owned by Alan Dixon. Williams said Lopez was offered $55,000 for her home, which he said was a fair price for a home in that area of the city. He said Dixon also was looking at alternative sites for his commercial garage storage site. Dixon's other property is a vacant lot. I hate eminent domain, Williams said. He said the property owners will get more than fair market value if they work with us. He also said the city has legal grounds to take the land due to the prop due due to the properties needed for a greater good project. Some aldermen, including Ward 7 Alderman Bob Iverson, said they don't like taking people's property. They added, however, it's a tool for the city to use for projects. Neither Lopez nor Dixon attended the city council meeting. Ward 5 Alderman Mike Purr noted Lopez's property north of the pediatric doctor's office had seen a landslide behind it more than a decade ago due to water seeping out of a nearby property in addition to rains. Also Tuesday, the council heard from OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center Pastor Phil Jackson, who asked the council to not allow Logan Avenue to be closed for the Carl project. Jackson said he sees firsthand with the trauma team that every minute and second counts towards saving lives. Strokes and cardiac arrests do not wait, Jackson said, about an 8-minute golden window. He said closing Logan just north of North Street for Carl to consolidate its Danville facilities in a $50 million 17-acre Carl Medical campus spanning both sides of Logan Avenue and going to Robeson Street to the east, North Street on the south, and Madison Street to the north, will add about 7 stoplights for people driving to the hospital. Many don't use an ambulance, he added. Jackson said if aldermen want to do anything to help the medical facilities along Logan Avenue, they could look at widening the street, paving it all the way, and fixing storm drainage. He told aldermen about Logan Avenue. Please don't close it, Williams commented. Williams commented there are only 4 stoplights that traffic would be diverted to, and they are looking to remove the stoplights at Main Street and Logan Avenue and at Gilbert and Harrison Streets. He also said Carl did a study that showed an additional drive time about 16 to 30 seconds to the hospital with the Logan Avenue closure. In other business, council members approved authorizing the purchase of 12 land parcels for $10,200 from the Vermilion County Trustee prior to the delinquent property tax auction. The properties are purchased at the minimum bid of $800 each and a $50 recording fee. The properties are Edgewood Park Circle, Blighted Area Road Closure, 2709 East Main Street, Property Dangerous Structure on Main Thoroughfare Redevelopment, East Main 3 Corner Lots West of South Minnesota, Mead Park Frontage Development, East Main Lot 3 East of Home, West of Tillman, Neighborhood Redevelopment, Lot at 1001 East Main Street, Neighborhood Redevelopment, 1-story brick structure laundromat by O'Brien's at 742 East Main Street, blighted property, dangerous structure on Main Thoroughfare Redevelopment, 1-story commercial structure at 129 North Vermilion Street, blighted property, dangerous structure on Main Thoroughfare Redevelopment, the lot between Harwell and Lincoln Lanes at 105 West Harris, create parking for downtown and Fisher's Theater, lot at 420 Harmon Street, road reconfiguration safety improvement, lots at 425 and 503 Chandler, road configuration safety improvement, and 1.5 story home at 507 Chandler, road reconfiguration safety improvements. They also a $108,771 contract with Cross Construction of Urbana for the sidewalk extension and installation of gates at the CSX railroad tracks and right-of-way on Griffin Street. Community development blocks grant funds are being used for this payment. Additional work costing $24,140 for the English and Jackson Streets roundabout intersection. Williams said there were items that were overlooked, such as a driveway not done properly, finishing sidewalks, and other work. Funding comes from the city's gas tax, the Infrastructure Development and Improvement Program. Amending the $80,848 storm drainage improvement contract with Big O Services for Harrison Park Golf Course driveway and Logan Avenue. The additional work cost $30,661. The work is paid from the city sewer enterprise Fund for storm infrastructure improvement. They amended the zoning ordinance and map for the rezoning of 826 East Main Street for a digital sign at Trinity Evangelical Lutheran Church, and they authorized Baird Public Finance to serve as managing underwriter in issuance of Series 2019 bonds and the refunding of Series 2009 general obligation funds. Okay, we'll run through the obituaries. Larry L. Cox, 74, of Danville, passed away at 11:50 p.m. October 13th at Colonial Manor in Danville. Private family services will be held, and interment will be in Sunset Memorial Park, Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville at 3940 North Vermillion Street is assisting with the family and the arrangements. Memorials may be made in memory of Larry to St. Jude's Children's Hospital. Donald Don J. Ellis, 67, of Humrick, Illinois, passed away at 4:34 p.m. Saturday, October 12th, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Don was originally from Danville. Funeral services at 2 p.m. Thursday, October 17th, at Robeson Chapel in Catlin, Illinois, with Pastor Glenn Thompson officiating. Burial in Jones Grove Cemetery, visitation from noon to 2 p.m. on Thursday, October 17th at Robeson Chapel in Catlin. Wyatt Allen Pope, 9, of Georgetown, passed away at 8:46 a.m. Saturday, October 12th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Also, Tyler Pope, 29, of Danville, passed away October 9th at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. A celebration of both Wyatt and Tyler's lives will be at 1 p.m. Friday, October 18th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Georgetown at 200 East West Street, with Kevin Cox officiating. Visitation will be from 10 to 1 p.m. Friday prior to the services at the funeral home. They will be laid to rest together at Oak Hill Cemetery in Danville. Memorial donations may be given in Wyatt's memory to his family to help with the final expenses through Sunset Funeral Home or through Longview Bank. Natalie Carol Collins, 34, of Danville, passed away Sunday, October 13th at home. Memorial service will be from 11 to 1 p.m. Friday, October 18th at First Church of Christ in Georgetown, with Pastor Phil Miller officiating. Natalie will be cremated at Rortfort Funeral Services and Cremation in Tilton. In lieu of flowers, family asked that donations be made to Soul Garden Recovery Center at 801 West Fairchild Street in Danville. Kelly Ann Hughes Huron, 81, passed away October 15th at Danville Care Center in Danville. Services for Carolyn are pending with Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, 3940 North Vermillion Street. Tramell J.M. Hooser, 21, of Danville, died at 808 p.m. Saturday, October 5th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services will be at noon on Friday at New Life Church of Faith, 1419 North Bowman Avenue in Danville. Pastor Thomas W. Miller will officiate. Burial will be in Sandhill Memorial Park in Danville. Visitation will be from 11 to noon on Friday at the church. And Willie F. Moat, 84, of Danville, died at 5:42 a.m. Wednesday, October 16th at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Leek & Sons Funeral Home in Danville. And Francis A. Troxell, 81, of Hoopston, died at 1:13 p.m. Tuesday, October 15th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Anderson Funeral Home at 427 East Main Street in Hoopston. Okay, the next story is titled Hoopston Names FACED Committee. This is written by Carol Hicks in Hoopston. Mayor Bill Krusenberry presented five names to City Council members Tuesday for the FACED Grant Committee. Council members unanimously approved the list. Krusenberry said each name represented the City Council, Chamber, Historical, and Business sections of the town. Marta Pierce represented the city, Alderwoman Robin Lawson, the council, Valerie Hinkle, the chamber, Carol Hicks, historical, and Emily Brown, business. An organizational meeting will be set next week, according to Krusenberry, to review the program. The following week, the committee will consider a recent grant request. Money for that the grant comes from TIF funds. Maximum grants are $5,000, said Krusenberry. In other council business, perpetual care bids will be opened at 10 a.m. on November 5th. Specifications located at the Water Department window for those interested. Trick-or-treating in the city will be from 5:30 to 7 p.m. October 31st. Council discussed the structure at 202-204 North Market Street and was advised by City Attorney Chuck Mockbee to discuss the building with the tax trustees in order to go forward with possible demolition. The Dyer Mansion on East Honeywell and Fifth Streets is in bankruptcy, according to Krusenberry, and is tied up in court. Krusenberry commented that the ordinance regarding gaming machines will not need to be changed. As long as a business is compliant with the Illinois Gaming Act, they are compliant, Krusenberry said. Doug Wagoner, Fast Lanes Bowling Alley, requested the ordinance be changed to allow for a sixth gaming machine for the state added for a business. A special council meeting will be at 6:30 p.m. on October 29th in City Hall with a special agenda regarding recreational cannabis. The public will be able to comment on whether to allow the sale of recreational cannabis in the city. The city has received construction plans from Casey's in regard to the truck stop on the corner of Illinois Routes 1 and 9. Subway and Subway Corporation have not yet settled. Resident Stan Steiner asked Krusenberry and the council about Governor Pritzker's proposal to put all city police and fire department funds into a special state fund. The state would only manage the $3.1 million of Hoopston's police and fire department's funds, said Alderman Bill Goodwine. Steiner replied, the state hasn't done very well managing the state funds. Why would they do well with ours? Krusenberry said the Illinois Municipal League is on board with the consolidation of funds. Matt Peake will become city attorney as Mockbee becomes corporation counsel for Danville. The next city council session will begin at 7 p.m. on November 5th in the city hall. Okay, the next story is titled Vermilion County Trial, Accused Wrong Choice, But It's Not Murder, and this is written by Tracy Crane in Danville. A 50-year-old woman accused of fatally striking her 61-year-old wife in July of 2018 told a jury that she wishes she had called 911 in the 3 days before emergency personnel arrived. I made the wrong choice. I admit that, but it's not murder, said Shelley Murphy of rural Danville, who took the witness stand Wednesday in Vermilion County Circuit Court in her own defense. She's charged with three counts of first-degree murder in the July 25, 2018 death of her wife, Day Lynn Murphy. Shelley Murphy displayed a range of emotions and behavior while testifying, from crying to confusion to agitation to anger, especially under questioning by the prosecution. The prosecutors pressed her on several points, including why she walked more than a mile to the Black Bear Tavern to call her mother, but never called 911 in the 3 days her wife lay face down on the floor, bruised and unresponsive, following a fight that left bloodstains on the walls of their mobile home. Shelley Murphy testified that she feared repercussions of calling 911, saying her wife's medications might be taken away or her wife might be put in a mental ward. I didn't want her to be mad at me, said Shelley Murphy, who testified she was trying to push Mrs. Murphy off of her during their Sunday night scuffle, described as a one-minute fight preceded by a day of drinking excessively and using methamphetamine. She said the two were arguing that night, and the taller and heavier Mrs. Murphy held her down and bit her. Shelley Murphy said that after the struggle, she went to their bedroom, passed out, and woke up in the middle of the night to look for Mrs. Murphy, realizing she wasn't in bed. She said she found her wife face down, snoring on the floor of the other bedroom, and thought she was asleep. Late the next morning, Shelley Murphy said Mrs. Murphy was still there, face down, snoring. It was only 11 a.m., so I left her, said Shelley Murphy, who testified that she went back to bed and got up about 5 p.m. that same day, and Mrs. Murphy was still lying on the same spot, face down and snoring. Shelley Murphy said she thought about calling 911 but decided not to after talking with her mother. Shelley said she woke up at 10 a.m. 2 days after their fight and tried to wake Mrs. Murphy, who was still in the same spot and position. Unsuccessful, she walked to the Black Bear and called her mom about what to do, according to testimony from Shelley Murphy, who also said she sprayed water in Mrs. Murphy's face to wake her up, gave her ice chips and to hydrate her and clean her up because she had gone to the bathroom on herself. The next day, Shelley said said she was asleep most of the day until a visit from her sister, who initiated the call to 911 after seeing Mrs. Murphy. On Tuesday, a Vermilion County Sheriff's deputy had testified that he was the first to arrive at the mobile home the day of 911 call and found the victim nude, unresponsive, and lying face down on the floor of the bedroom. With the defendant's sisters attempting CPR, he said he went outside to make sure the ambulance could find the home and did an initial interview with the defendant, who also spoke with ambulance personnel and a sheriff's investigator. But Shelley testified that she didn't recall any officer at the mobile home that day and didn't recall talking with an ambulance worker. Prosecutors from the Illinois Attorney General's Office, who are prosecuting the case, questioned Shelley Murphy about inconsistencies in her testimony and what she initially told sheriff's investigators in conversations 2 days and 4 days after the incident. She said multiple times that she didn't recall. "I was intoxicated. I don't remember all of it," she said at one point while looking directly at the jurors. The prosecution also brought up a recorded phone call that she made to her mother on October 6 while in custody at the Vermilion County Jail. Prosecutor Steve Nade asked Shelley whether she told her mom in that phone call that she wished she had never met Mrs. Murphy and whether she called Mrs. Murphy a expletive retard, a dumbass, a stupid, and a moron. Shelley quickly turned to the jury. "I don't recall saying anything like that," she said. The second day of the testimony also included Dr. Scott Denton with the McLean County Coroner's Office, who performed the autopsy on Mrs. Murphy. He told jurors her cause of death was subdural hematoma, bleeding in the skull due to a physical altercation. He described bruising on Mrs. Murphy's face, other areas of her head and her body, and explained that at the time of the autopsy, most were about 2 to 3 days old. He described bruises on the back of the hands as consistent with defensive wounds. 5 bruises on the side of her head, he testified, were consistent with knuckles, representing, in his opinion, 2 fist blows to her head. He said they were not consistent with a fall because of the pattern of internal head injuries and the lack of injuries on her ear. He said toxicology reports showed that methamphetamine in Mrs. Murphy's system, but no alcohol or blood thinners, despite information that she might have a prescription. But Denton said the report doesn't mean she hadn't been drinking, because the body would have continued to metabolize the alcohol while she was lying there. And the defense rested its case after Shelley Murphy's testimony, and the trial is expected to wrap up today with closing arguments followed by jury deliberations. Okay, just a quick community brief. Danville Sensory Halloween Set. Puzzled Minds Vermilion County plans a sensory Halloween for children with autism, special needs, and sensory processing disorders. Costumes are welcome, but masks are not allowed. The event will be from 6 to 7:30 on Tuesday, rain or shine, at the edge at 3723 North Vermilion Street. There will be treats, games, crafts, and bounce house. Email Puzzles Minds Vermco, it's VERMCO @gmail.com to register. And Danville Library has Kids Snack Club at 3:30 p.m. on Tuesdays in the children's section. They combine stories and snacks set to educate children. This week's makes a cookie spider snack for ages 5 to 18, children under 8 with a caregiver. So that'll be it for today, Thursday, October 17th, 2019. Kind of chilly today, so try to stay warm. Hopefully you have a good week, and hopefully I'll see you again next week. Take care. Bye.